Welcome, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Defending the Natty podcast. Hope you guys have been doing great over the last, has it been a month and a half, almost 2 months? Like, I told you guys we'd get around to this eventually, but boy, has it been an eventually. But we're here now. You are listening to the preeminent college fantasy football dynasty podcast. You can find us on all your podcast feeds once a month, around the 15th of each month. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campuscanton.com, subscribe there with one of our tiers. You'll find everything you need for your CFF, Devy, and C2C embedding needs. As I'm sure as many of you know, I can be found on Twitter. I'm at CFF underscore Jared, and with me, as always, is my co-host and partner in crime when it comes to dominating the world of CFF Dynasty, and that is Nate Marquis. You can find him on Twitter at CFF Nate. Nate, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. Has been a minute since we've sat down and talked. I guess the freshman podcast is what we did last. So yeah. We're in the heart of supplemental draft season. So no better time than now to discuss some of the supplemental guys here. So I'm looking forward to it.
I have a supplemental draft starting each week over the next 4 weeks.
Very nice.
So it I'm definitely right in the heart of it. And of course, I have to start with the doozy, and that is your behemoth of a league with 24 teams, three starting quarterbacks and everything like that. So do we want to discuss that, I guess, since we're in the middle of supplemental
talk? Sure. It's two starting quarterbacks and one super flex. But
it's three starting quarterbacks.
In a pinch, you might have a running back go off. I don't know.
True.
So yeah, we can discuss that. Sure.
Yeah. So again, for those who may not have ever heard us discuss this league before, it is Nate's 2014. This is your second 2014 league, right? Like, you have another one, right?
I'm in a couple. This one's kind of a little bit of a copy with some tweaks to one that I had started a couple of years before this one. This is year three of the one you're in with me here that I started. So it's got a good mix of some guys that a lot of people know in the industry, and then some guys that, you know, aren't content creators or do podcasts, but are very good you know, CFF dynasty players, and then just a mix of just kind of all degrees of owners, I would say, in this league. It's what makes it really fun and what makes it interesting when the draft comes around every year.
This is Nate's playground. He's won the league 2 years in a row. He's burying the lead on that. Obviously, yes, you try to compete every year, but be honest, Nate, do you think you can three-peat?
I'm going to give it a shot, man. If you can tell from my first couple picks, I'm not exactly playing for the year 2028. That's for sure.
No, totally fair. Although your trades tell me a different story as well, because you gave me Jaheim White and Denzel Boston. I forget who did I give you in that trade. Here it is. Found it. So I gave you Cedric Bailey, Kentrell Bullock, and my fifth round pick, and then you gave me Jaheim White, Denzel Boston, and round 11 pick. So now that trade's well in the books at this point, were you just trying to offload some guys that you were feeling a little bit hesitant about this year?
Yes and no. I mean, I'm not hesitant, I would say. Like I think the floor is still really, really strong for both of those players that I sent your way, Denzel Boston and Jaheim White. And I think we could both agree that they also have a really high ceiling. I mean, I own Williams for the Huskies, Damon Williams. So I'm hoping that he has a really strong season. Part of it was, I'm curious to see what the passing game looks like for Washington. Denzel Boston was actually kind of bad the second half of the season, and he was a little banged up, so I'll kind of give him a pass on that. Honestly, it was just a situation. I was gung-ho, dude. You were like the 12th person whose door I knocked on trying to get a good, solid young quarterback or a really good quarterback option. And we'd come to the point in that journey where where that was the guy that I had landed on. But I honestly think North Carolina State's, like, I got to reading up on their spring situation, and I'm just like, I'm looking at some of their players, and I'm like, you know what? I think there's a chance for this offense to be decent. And the offensive coordinator that took over.
Don't fall for it, Nate.
What's the name of the OC, Roper, that took over?
Yeah, Roper.
Like I started looking at his past quarterbacks, and the one trend I kept seeing is rushing touchdowns from the quarterback. Like it was consistently like anywhere from 5 to 12. And so I'm like, okay, there's something to at least work with here. And I've heard their defense is going to take a massive step back. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe again, kind of a long shot, but I will say this. I am very bullish on the South Alabama players that were left over from a lot of the transfers that they had. And so I like the quarterback and the running back situation there. So that's why I've gone after those guys in trades and draft.
Yeah, I noticed you took Bishop Davenport with your first round pick there. And honestly, like, I don't blame you. Like, what's the likelihood of him transferring up after a good year after this year, right? Like he.
Yeah, I don't think it's great. Like, I think maybe he does, but I mean, I think he's kind of in the right spot, and he's got the right staff there with him. So I kind of like where he's at. And it wasn't like I took him early in the first round. It was a 19th pick. It was basically like the middle of a second round of a supplement.
No, I was just having that conversation with Chris Kay and Ethan Sowers and everything, because we were talking about the Aeneas Williams pick that came off there at 4-1, and Chris Kay was like, I don't know if I like that pick in the fourth round. And I'm like, well, it's really more like a seventh round pick. Like, you gotta value it like that, right? Like, once you say, like, okay, Aeneas Williams in the seventh round, that feels a lot better.
24 teamer is a different animal, man.
Oh, it's so crazy, dude.
It's like you're on the elbow with every pick, but you only get one instead of two. And then you gotta wait 24 picks until your next one. Even though this isn't a snake draft, I mean, you're still gonna wait 24 picks. So it's kind of crazy.
You and I are both, like, I've made 4 or 5 picks so far, and I know for a fact only one of them has been in the original spot that pick was in. You and I both move around a lot. We like to trade away later picks, trying to move up, grab our guys and stuff like that, because I think you have to in CFF Dynasty, right? If you're looking at your queue and there's like one guy that stands out compared to the rest of the queue, you got to move heaven and earth to try to get up there. Because as I put out in a tweet recently, in CFF Dynasty supplementals, like, every player that you're looking at, there's a 50-50 shot of him making it all the way to you or being the very next pick off the board, because there's literally no ADP. You can't chance it.
Yeah, it's wild. There'll be like 20 picks in a row where I'm like, hey, man, we're looking good. Like, none of those guys were really in my queue. I'm feeling really good about it. And then there'll be like 3 picks in a row where I'm like, oh, damn. Like, that was like the 3 guys that I really wanted. So you just, yeah, you never know. You never know how it's going to play out.
One bit of strategy, and I have zero clue if this is actually the strategy that he was going with, but it is something I started thinking about as he was doing it. Chris Moxley traded back like 3 times in a row on his pick and just kept accumulating like later round picks and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden he starts trading up with the assets that he accumulated. And I thought, I'm like, that's actually a very interesting strategy to do. Like, trade a little bit out of the first and second round, accumulate a bunch of picks, so that then once you get into that like late second, third round range, at least in this draft, right, you can then kind of pick and choose when you want to trade up and grab your guys, right? You have those assets versus like me over here. I don't have a pick in the 11th through 14th round because I just kept trading those away, versus Mox was just like, I'll get out of the first round and just use those picks that I accumulate from that to pick and choose when I get guys.
Yeah.
Just to see what value falls.
Trading up in drafts like this is really fun when you get to make that pick, and then it really sucks whenever you're like, crap, well, I will see you guys on Thursday for my next pick.
No, for real. I traded out of my third round pick, and in order to make, I think, my second round pick I made in this draft, and then like I didn't have another pick until the fourth round, which in this draft, that's like, I think it was like 40 something picks, and I'm like, all right, well, see y'all, I'll be around.
I thought your draft strategy was interesting when you traded. I guess technically you traded up to get Zach Palmer Smith, the ULM combo, Zach Palmer Smith and Deshaun Ford. Is that right? You traded up to grab those guys?
I did. So I saw that I was kind of coming on the end of the second round. I'm like, I saw that Zach Palmer Smith and Deshaun Ford were still on the board, and I'm like, well. Yeah. This is one of those backfields. I was like, I'm willing to grab just both guys and see how it plays. Because theoretically, I've now locked down Ryan Vincent's running back for the next 2 years, right? Because in my opinion,
next 1 year. Well, but here's potentially, if you drafted Ahmad Hardy last year, would you said you locked up that room for 2 years?
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Like theoretically on paper, right? Like maybe like ZPS this year, and then like Deshaun Ford, even if Brian Vincent like changes coaching, right? Like if he goes to a different school and stuff like that, he'll probably take Ford with him, right? As long as there's a good relationship there. So like that's my thought process of like, okay, best case scenario, I get ZPS this year, Deshaun Ford in the future, or I just play it safe with these two and just lock down that running back room, but no matter who comes out of there.
I loved it because like if you're like me, where you only have one pick around, or like most owners, where you only have one pick in each round and they're spaced 24 picks apart, like it's really hard to pull the trigger on a backfield that is, you know, is going to be awesome, but you're not sure who it's going to be. So it's like, well, crap, if I take one of them and then somebody else takes the other guy and I just totally whiffed on that. That's a painful selection. But if you can get them both and secure it for at least this year and potentially multiple years, I think it's a really good strategy. It's the same scenario of why I've done a couple trades with you whenever I traded for Michael Hawkins when I owned John Mateer. Yep. I wanted that security blanket there. And then I forget, I didn't. Oh, I trade same trade. I own Anthony Hankerson and grabbed Allah from you as an extra piece in that same trade. And it was like, okay, well now at least maybe I have this year and next year maybe wrapped up for that backfield.
And as we'll discuss here, as when we get to Sashes later on, like in that exact same trade, I asked for I had Jalen Henderson and got Mark Yall. And that was kind of what you sold me on, was like, hey, you get both of these guys.
Right. Yeah. I think with the era that we are dealing with now, we kind of need to just say, okay, can I lock up this room for this year and not look at it as, okay, can I have a clear next man up strategy? Because that just doesn't really play out very well anymore. But, you know, hey, if John Mateer gets hurt, then, you know, I got Michael Hawkins right there. So it doesn't really cost me a whole lot in the long run. But yeah, I mean, it's gotten really, really hard to predict what 2026 is going to look like when you're drafting in August of 25 or June of 25.
Speaking of, one thing that I kind of focus on, I mean, it sounds a little hypocritical because I went after a G5 running back room, obviously with those two picks, because that system's through the ceiling. But like my first two picks, I was focusing on like, I'm going to grab power four guys over G5 guys, right? So like back-to-back picks for us here. I took Joseph Williams out of Colorado at 210. You took Matthew Coleman, the pick right afterwards, at 211. Technically, if you just look at my redraft rankings, I should have gone Matthew Coleman. He's got the same number of years of eligibility left. Actually, no, I think Williams has more, but...
Yeah, Williams is second-year guy, and Coleman's third-year guy.
But even so, like, I'm treating them as the same because I think Williams will be gone after his junior year, right? But, like, technically, in that mindset, I probably should have gone Coleman, but like the tiebreaker for me was power four. Are you kind of treating it like that?
Yes and no. I'm kind of treating it as it's dynasty. So sure, I would like one of the reasons why I was sold on Bishop Davenport is because he does have 2 years of eligibility remaining. Like I'm just a firm believer in, I would rather take the guaranteed starter in a really good system that has multiple years over the freshman that hasn't shown me anything yet and that is definitely not going to start this year because it might be 2 years before they get to start. So, but yes, the G5 component of this definitely is a gray cloud looming over every draft now, because we saw what happened to Fluff Bothwell. We saw what happened to Ahmad Hardy. You know, we saw what happened to Gio Lopez and stuff like that. Like, it's just, you get one good year out of these G5 guys. And I mean, the money talks, and I can't blame them. But all of those guys, like, their value is very different today than it was in December when we thought that they might be returning back to that prime position they were in.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. And it's always heartbreaking when it's guys who sit there and say like, oh yeah, no, I'm locked in and everything like that. Guys like Gio Lopez, he was like, yeah, I'm locked in at South Alabama. Spring portal comes around, he's gone. Damian Martinez the year before, he's like, I'm locked in on Oregon State. Spring portal comes around, he's like, that Miami money, that seems pretty nice over there.
Yeah, and there's the other side of that coin too, where like, For instance, you drafted in the first round, you took the Alabama Latsier Brooks, the
Yes.
Alabama wide receiver. Let's say a year or two goes by and it just doesn't work out for him there at Alabama. Him and Kalen DeBoer, it just doesn't work. If he transfers down, then you've now got a guy that is a hyped up four star from a SEC program. That, like, most likely his value will still retain to a certain degree.
Oh yeah.
Versus when these G5 guys, when Tawan Porter Payton goes off this year and transfers up next year or whatever to Georgia, who knows? His value isn't the same because now he's competing in a backfield full of four and five star guys, you know.
Oh, 100%. No, I agree. Yeah, when you draft power four guys, like that's the safety blanket you're kind of relying on. Because like all these guys like pop up randomly and you like sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, right? Like LV Bunkley Shelton going to Georgia Southern last year, like
right.
Did it work out? No, but like it gave him a little bit of bump in value for just like a couple months there where people were like, okay, maybe this is a spot where he finally works out, right? Somebody that comes to mind this year, Kojo Antwi, coming over from Ohio State, right? He's just buried on that depth chart for years, and then now mm-hmm. he's going to Colorado State, a room that quite frankly just nobody stands out in. It's like, okay, maybe he's got a little bit of value all of a sudden.
All right. Two guys that were taken in the third round of this draft, Walker Howard and Shelton Sampson,
yep.
Both SEC players. And it didn't work out. Both were, Walker Howard. I was looking at him. I was like, holy crap. I forgot he was a five star. Like he was a bona fide five star. And I'm like, this guy's like 6'1", 190 pounds. This was the five star. What is the guy that did the weird thing with Brian Kelly? He was the first one to do the weird wave thing, spinning around in the thing, and then they just kind of made it a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then he transferred the year afterwards.
right, to Ole Miss. But yeah, I mean, like that's an example. Like those guys now carry a little bit of value, whereas if they transfer up, it hurts their value. So they can kind of have a little bit of a rebirth, even if it doesn't work out for them at their initial landing spot at one of the P4 programs.
All righty. That's enough about this particular draft. I'm sure we'll reference it here and there when we talk about some of these players and everything. But Nate, last month or last episode, we talked about the freshmen for this class. We talked about, you know, some instant contributors, some guys to stash, some guys we were fading. This time around, we're going to discuss supplemental players, and in a very similar format, we're going to break this down into three categories. Basically, we will be talking about some elite contributors. These are guys that have multiple years left of eligibility, guys that you would consider taking over some of the upper-tier freshmen, potentially. Again, I'm not, like, the names I put on here are not names that I'm saying that you or I particularly like over our upper-tier freshmen, but I feel like people will look at those names and say, I am considering taking them. Lineup contributors, these are guys that I classified as like, you know, one-year rentals or some guys with big question marks that you're willing to take shots on. Guys you're not really relying on like boosting your roster that much, but could help you out for the year. And then the last category, which is increasingly more and more rare as CFF Dynasty goes along, and that is potential stashes, right? Some non-freshman guys that you want to hold on to, see what happens to them next year. And I think we both came to the realization that you kind of touched on it earlier that trying to predict a year out is just dang near impossible now. And so like there's very few guys that I think even really fall into this category anymore that you wouldn't just say, let me stash a freshman and see what they do after 1 year. Right.
Yeah.
So we'll start with the elite contributors. I should mention that one, we'll discuss a lot of names today. And obviously because of the way CFF Dynasty is, the guys who are available in each league are going to vary very wildly depending on who you're playing with, when you had waivers cut off and everything like that. I had this discussion with somebody earlier when they saw that I took Joseph Williams. They're like, Joseph Williams, like, how did nobody take him last year? And I'm like, well, because our waiver cutoff was like, what, week 9? I forget what is in your...
Yeah, I set it up the same, whatever week the playoffs start, I think is whenever I set it up.
And he didn't go off until like the last three games.
Right. Yeah. 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 I mean, everybody's league rules are a little bit different. I see some supplementals where it's like, oh, wow. Like that's actually a really deep, like supplemental draft pool. But I play in another league where you can take a guy all the way up until literally the championship week or during the championship week, and you can retain them. So obviously those draft pools are a little bit thinner.
Oh, for sure. And the last thing I'll mention here is that in order to try to filter out who would be available in most dynasty leagues, we went with a criteria that is they had to be rostered on 10% or less of leagues at the end of 2024. I figure that most dynasty leagues go about to about those guys that are about 10%. We'll start with the elite contributors here, Nate. We got about 10 guys here. I got one guy with a question mark that maybe we bring him up, maybe we don't. We'll start with some quarterbacks here. Micah Alejado. I think we both agree that like if we were doing like a supplemental only draft, he would probably be the 101.
Yeah, I'm looking at the rest of this list. I think with the guys on this list, I mean, I think he's probably the best available player that you've got listed here. He's somebody that I listed when we talked about our top five dynasty players. I think we did that back in maybe like January or February,
Oh,
this
yeah.
February, our top five dynasty players by position. Michael Alejado was in my top five. So yeah, I mean, he's somebody I would definitely be targeting in supplemental drafts.
Yeah, I do have him as my QB5 in Dynasty. I finally, I'm like, guys, I'm like 95% of the way to having my Dynasty rankings ready to go and uploaded onto the website. So you'll have those access here soon. But I do have Michael Alejado as my QB5. So yeah, I
Did you
mean,
finally move him up? Because when we did that pod, he was like
I
QB
did.
50 for you at that time or something like that in a redraft.
Well, in yeah, redraft, I definitely moved him up because I realized like I was like I'm playing too much here.
I mean, but there is still some risk. Like we are banking on that Timmy Chang offense to finally be what we hope that run and shoot system can be. And we're like, I mentioned this to you guys in Slack, a couple of weeks ago. Like my biggest concern with Michael Alejado is that the one sample size game we got from him last year was against New Mexico. And that's literally the worst, of any team you could choose to play to get a litmus test as to how good a player is. That's the worst
Oh,
because
yeah.
they're so bad and their offense is so good that they make every game, they make every game a shootout last year, with D Dampier. And so it's just like, man, I still don't know how good he is because he looked awesome in that game, but everybody looked awesome against New Mexico.
Yeah, no, here's the thing, Nate. When I project him solely based off of what Hawaii's done the last 2 years and everything, he still projects out to about 278 fantasy points. And so that still gets him in like the top 24 quarterbacks for me. In my just straight up rankings, that would be QB15. So like again, I was playing around too much at the beginning of the season. He's obviously the upside's too real, right? Like I got him as QB8 in redraft, QB5 in Dynasty now. So,
I love him, man. He was really fun to watch that in Mexico game.
oh my God, that is such a fun game. What about Austin Simmons? This is a guy that I was kind of surprised more Dynasty teams weren't really after, especially after we didn't get to see a lot of him last year, right? But like the few glimpses we did do, he had a really good drive against Georgia when Jackson Dart had to go out for a little bit there. Definitely had some flashes. He is, let me see, I think he's got 2 years of eligibility left, technically.
No, he'll have three. Last year was his
Three.
red shirt freshman year, I'm pretty sure.
Good
I think
Lord.
this is his I think this is his red shirt sophomore year. Yeah,
He
remember
does.
he's graduating as a technically as a 19-year-old sophomore is what they're making a big deal about.
Gotcha. Oh,
So
yeah.
he's boy genius. Makes me wonder, like, how hard are the academics at Ole Miss? Like, what's going
Not super great, I could tell you that much right now.
on
Yep, you're right. 3 years of eligibility. I got him realistic years of eligibility. I got him at one because I think he comes out after this year. If he has a good enough year, he'll try to follow in the footsteps of Jackson Dart.
Wow. Okay. Maybe. Yeah.
I mean,
I think my biggest. Go ahead.
I was to say like if he performs where I got him ranked, which is currently QB 18 for redraft and QB 24 for Dynasty, right? Like then.
It's just so rare to see a guy start 1 year. Like those players just like we don't see that very much anymore. The NFL's kind of shied away from Putting a whole lot of draft capital in these guys that have only played, like, I feel like they've kind of gone the opposite direction. Like they've seen like they want the Bo Nix and the Michael Penix, and like even Jackson Dart started 3 years, I'm pretty sure, maybe even four, like, to 3.5, basically to 1.5 at USC, and then over at Ole Miss for a couple of years. But I think my biggest concern with Austin Simmons is I still don't know how good of an athlete he is. One of the things that really boosted the production of Dart was his willingness to run, and that staff's willingness to dial up plays where he takes off and stuff. And I don't know if Austin Simmons has that in his game. But I think they've surrounded him with enough weapons, and every year they just reload in the portal. So I think his floor is as Lane Kiffin quarterback is really high.
If he's got a willingness to run, he'll easily, I think, perform his ADP, right? Like, just based off of his numbers alone, he's been averaging 5.3 yards per carry, which to me says that, like, when he does run, he can be efficient there. That projects out to about 477 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns. You think he can make that?
Not from what I've heard, as far as where he is as an athlete, they kind of more in that kind of 250 range, and maybe he gets 5 touchdowns. I don't know. But
They don't
yeah,
really
I
have a
mean,
stud at running back, so maybe they do get him some run around the goal
yeah,
line.
if he gets 450 and five, I think you're sitting pretty, because they're gonna sling it around, no problem there in the Grove.
What about Nico Marchiol? He's got 2 years of eligibility, obviously, there at West Virginia. Rich Rod it being the main story there. I'll be real, like, my projections based on what Marchiol has done so far, like, they don't project out as well as I kind of hoped they would. But he's been kind of pretty inefficient on the ground. I don't know if that's just been, having Neil Brown as your head coach and not being able to utilize a dual threat quarterback over there when he is out there. But obviously, they had Garrett Green, so I can't really knock him for not using a dual threat quarterback. So where do we sit with Marquise?
Yeah, I mean, to have him, like, you've got him. I mean, I guess is this top 10 that you got here, is this like your rankings of the top 10 available in this category, the elite
So
contributors?
you added this. It's not a ranking at all. It's
Okay.
literally I did quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers.
Oh,
You
okay.
had like four names in here, and I just kind of populated the rest of some other guys that I think
Gotcha.
were worth discussing.
Okay.
There's no real order to this.
Yes and no. Like he's definitely a notch or two below the first two guys we've discussed, just because one, they're guaranteed starters, and Marquiel at this point is not. Now it does sound like maybe he's got a little bit of a leg up, which on Henderson, which is good. But yeah, it's kind of interesting because he's not quite the athlete at quarterback that we've seen Rich Rod implement in the last few stops that he's had. But at the same time, I looked at some of the numbers from what was his name, Huff, last year. Before he got there and played under Rich Rod, he was like a 300 yards, 5 TD kind of guy. So it's like, well, he's not going to run that much. And then obviously he did a lot. So I think Marquiel is a good enough athlete where he could get you 500 yards and somewhere between, 8 to 10 touchdowns. So you got that kind of upside. I'll be curious to see where he's going to land as far as passing. Yeah, I mean, it's a Rich Rod quarterback with a couple of years remaining, so it's usually a pretty good investment.
My passing projections for him aren't super great because over the last 2 years, he's
Yeah.
averaged 6.2 yards per attempt. So I hope to God that he improves on that because right now he's projected about 1,500 passing yards.
Right. Yeah. That's, yeah,
And
I think that's probably the biggest concern.
then
You
15 touchdowns.
I just realized that the first three you've got listed here, Alejandro, Simmons, Marquio, all lefties.
Really?
Kind of funny. Yeah.
Well, look at that. Lefties get left in the dust, and we're here to pick them up in CFF. No, obviously, like the best case scenario here is probably Marquise starts this year and doesn't feel the need to move on after this year, right? And then just sticks with Rich Rod and it's like
Sure.
I'm going to stick with the hand that feeds me. I think Rich Rod, it seems like he's pretty committed to West Virginia this time around, right? Like he's
Yeah,
already
I think
left them
it's.
once and like the fact that he's coming back now, I feel like he's not really in any rush to go anywhere else, right?
Yeah, I think it's a situation where it's either It works out, and he's probably your quarterback for next year. He's not really good enough to move up to a real big power blue blood program, and West Virginia can make it work, or it just doesn't work out, and we see Jalen Henderson, at some point this year. Richrod is like he is somebody that if he sees, a chink in the armor and he wants to go a different direction, he will not hesitate to pull the trigger. Just think about what it was like at Jack State before Huff got there. Like it was a little bit of a QB carousel that was going on the first couple years there.
Same with the running back position until he kind of finally settled in on
Right.
Trey Stewart. Hopefully we don't get any of that mess this year and Jaheim White just starts from day
Sure.
one.
Yeah.
Here's a controversial figure in CFF this year, and that is the Mestamaniac himself, Drew Mestemaker, over there at North Texas. Obviously, he could be huge or he could be nothing. Right, he's got 4 years of eligibility. He has the potential to start for one of the most, quite frankly, one of the most electric offenses that he could at the G5 level against a schedule that is baby soft in the AAC there. And, or he could lose out this job to Reese Poffenbarger and we never hear from him ever again. Like, I feel like it's a huge, like, you're taking a huge risk with him, but is he worth the risk, Nate? Is, I guess, my question.
I think so.
You sounded like you started that sentence confident, and then you quickly realized, like, ah, I'm not as confident as I thought I was.
I mean, like it's like a situation where, I got vibes from the G5 Hive interview that he's going to win the job. His best friend is the star wide receiver that I'm sure we'll talk about. Like there's a lot of things, like he was incredible in the bowl game. There's a lot of things pointing towards him starting. But I would definitely want a handcuff because at the end of the day, we're talking about a guy that was a walk-on safety to North Texas who never really played quarterback. He didn't start as a quarterback in high school. Like that's what we're gonna that's a lot of risk to take on there if you take him early. So if you do, it's kind of one of those situations where I hope you have a couple of picks together, or I hope the rest of the draft is scared off by not wanting to take Poffenberger and him not winning that job. But man, I know they paid Poff some money to come there, and he was the first man out in that spring game. So it's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe the insiders just want to see Mestemaker win that job because it's a good story, but at the end of the day, like Reese Poffenberger is the one with the starting experience that came over from Miami,
No, I definitely agree. I will say in this supplemental draft, I did that strategy of grabbing ZPS and Deshaun Ford. If Mestemaker and Poffenbarger fell to the end of the first round, I was already making plans to trade up one of my second round picks and then have like the 2-1, 2-2, or 2-2, 2-3, and just grabbing both of them. I feel
I
like
mean,
that
I
would.
think they're like you're essentially, if you have both of them, you have wrapped up a what I think will be, as long as there's not a back and forth between two of them, if one of them takes a job and keeps it, I think that's a top 10 quarterback this year. That's just how I see it playing out.
I mean,
Either one of them.
in your league, they could go back and forth for all I care because I would just get the points regardless, right? Because
Sure.
it's best ball.
Yeah.
I
If you
wouldn't
have them
have.
both in best ball, then yeah. And I love it whenever I see people take the best ball strategy of taking both of them, like in later in the teen rounds, like late teens, take them both at 18, 19, something like that. If they last that long. And I think that's a really smart play.
Poffenbarger's definitely moved up in like redraft best ball. I think he's like QB 24 now, or not 24, 26. He's QB 26 now. And then where's Mestemaker? I saw him not too long ago. He's QB 57. So there's definitely still a gap between the two of them.
Poffenbarger is a better runner than people realize. I don't know that people realize that, but I would not be shocked if Poffenbarger has between 300 and 400 yards and, somewhere between 5 and 10 touchdowns. I think he's got that kind of ability.
I have him at, let's see. Yes, I have him at 345 rushing yards and about 3 to 4 touchdowns on the ground. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
I think that's his floor as far as touchdowns. If he's a starter, I think he could get closer to 10.
His passing numbers are eye popping here. I got him at 3,600 sure. and 31, 32 touchdowns.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So, let's move on here. Let's talk about some running backs, Nate. Some multi-year running backs that people could be looking at in these supplemental drafts. We'll start with Bryson Donaldson, which is like the ultimate, like, is he worth taking because, you know, he's at the G5 level. God knows what happens to him after this point, right? Is it not better to just go after some of these power four running backs that we'll talk about here in a second? But Donaldson probably definitely the highest among all of people's redraft leagues and stuff like that. Where do you fall on him?
I love him, man. I'm one of, I feel like I was one of Christopher Columbus on Bryson Donaldson. He's somebody that I drafted in Dynasty last year and talked about him often as a guy that could really blow up. So yeah, I think we're there. He clearly looked like a guy that was ready whenever he got his opportunity at the end of the year last year. So I think he's in line for a really big season. Top 10 running back, in my opinion.
I've got him at RB22 in redraft. I can pull up my dynasty rankings as well. I have him in dynasty at RB24, mostly because
that's too low. I mean, yeah, he could transfer next year, but that's too low.
Well, no, but here's my thing, right? There's two different systems kind of at war with Fresno State right now, right? Where you bring in the head coach Matt Ertz, right, and his running backs have been atrocious for CFF purposes, right? At North Dakota State runs committee all the time. I don't think that's necessarily what's going to happen here, because I think Donaldson is just legitimately better than, you know, Elijah Griffin and some of the other guys in that room. I think he'll get fed. But even when you look at, what's the offensive coordinator's name? Comes over from South Dakota, Josh Davis.
I can't keep any of the Dakotas, Idaho, Montana guys apart. I have no idea. It's all one big blob
up there.
Yep.
Which is crazy because you live in Missouri and you ought to be close, or you ought to know this better than I do. But
it's still halfway across country for me. It's a long ways.
But the other thing with Donaldson, right, is that, again, Davis's running backs over the last two years have averaged about 175 carries and then 33 targets. We haven't really seen much receiving work out of Donaldson, right? And I think if you have to get...
He caught like 11 balls in one game.
Did he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go back, check it out.
Yeah, he had one game where he had at least 10 or 11 targets. And I think he caught them all. He had a big receiving game.
Let me see.
It's in his bag, man. Check out his high school stats. It's stupid. He caught like a bazillion balls.
Okay, yeah, he caught 21 receptions last... Oh, that's what it is. He's super inefficient. That's my word.
How many? Didn't he have one game though where he caught 10 balls? Do you have his game log?
Nine. He caught nine receptions for 44 yards.
Okay, there you go.
But again, the 4.5 yards per reception is a little worrying, just a smidge.
Who's their quarterback?
EJ Warner.
Dude, they've got EJ Warner's trash. They've got to feed him, man. Like
I hope so. Just the projections aren't there for him yet. Okay. But again, like this is not me crapping on him. Like, again, I still got him as top 25 running back. I'm just like, I don't know if I could put him top 10 though.
Yeah.
But even so, like for dynasty purposes, yeah, I think he's worth taking in like the first two rounds of your draft, right? Like he's got a potential to like replicate what Malik Sherrod's done there over the last couple of years, right? If not better, because I think he's actually a better running back than Sherrod. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's good.
What about some of the other guys? David Gauss at North Carolina. Yeah. Where do you fall with him?
Let's talk about these next two together, because they're essentially doing the same thing. They're both replacing a just bona fide stud. And that's David Gauss, obviously, taking over for Hampton, or we assume taking over. And then Kyson Brown taking over for Scataboo. So
yep.
These guys are kind of one in the same, and we got a little bit of a sneak peek of both of them last year, probably a little bit more of Gauss than we did Brown, but I'm high on both these guys. I think you adequately place them here in the elite contributors. Now they're kind of in the same space as like Mark Hill and Mestemaker, that we haven't really seen it yet, but that's it. That's why this is dynasty. That's why this is supplemental draft. Like that's why these guys weren't owned at the beginning of the year. So, I would probably be a little bit higher on on Gals just because there is no other Kanye Udo in the backfield with him. But man, I tell you what, when that staff at Arizona State finds their guy, they will ride him into the ground. So if Kyson Brown can prove it early on in the season, I mean, I think 225 carries is definitely in his range of outcomes. And I just don't trust that North Carolina situation with the coaching staff. So I'm really worried about how good that offense is going to be. But I think I trust the run game more than I do the pass game.
Yeah, so between these two guys, I have Gallus as RB13 in Dynasty. I have Kyson Brown as RB34, right? Mostly because Brown only has 2 years of eligibility versus Gallus has three, right? Brown, if he has a good enough year, he'll be gone after this year. Which one do I start with? I guess I'll start with Gauss. I like everybody else, is kind of hesitant about Gauss with, you know, the changes in that staff in North Carolina. But here's the thing. There was one kind of key change. It was a change, but it's also a retention, right? Freddie Kitchens was the run game coordinator for North Carolina the last 2 years, and he's now the offensive coordinator. So, like, he had a big piece in Amarian Hampton getting that workload that he got. Right, and they clearly like Gallus. He was the RB2 as a true freshman last year, right? Yeah, he wasn't super efficient. I definitely worry about that a little bit, right? But I'm also not expecting Gallus to really have Hampton level production. But do I think Gallus can easily get you a top 30 running back for 2 years of the next 2 years? Absolutely. With Freddie Kitchens still there, I think he'll be good. Gallus actually entered the portal at one point, and then
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. And then Kitchens, or I don't know if Kitchens brought him back, but that staff was able to reel him back in. So I have a feeling that Gauss wouldn't come back if they weren't set to promise him a pretty sizable workload. So
sure,
I know a lot of people, and again, it could be that North Carolina is just terrible this year and the scoring opportunities aren't there, and it could be poo pooed all day long. But I like the situation there for Gauss. Kyson, I like him a lot. I think he's actually a really good player. And I was kind of quick to move off the Kanye Udo train when I was like, I don't know. Kyson Brown's going to have something to say about this backfield. I have Brown as RB31 in redraft, and that's with a 25% kind of confidence discount there. I've got him projected at 190 carries with 40 targets. I could even see the targets being higher than that. Wow, and that gets him
That'd
about
be nice.
1,236 yards. Like, I think he's a really good receiving back. My only thing is, you mentioned that, like, that staff, when they find somebody, they'll ride him into the ground. Wasn't quite the case with Kenny Dillingham when he was at Oregon and at Florida State, right? That was a very much a special case for...
yeah, but it was for the offensive coordinator when he was at Oregon. He was the one that was the... What was the smaller running back that went from Oregon to USC and was good at both places his
Travis
last year at Oregon? Dye. Yeah. So he was, their offensive coordinator was the one that was there at Oregon whenever, Dye was there, I'm pretty sure. So,
okay.
I mean, Dilly's got kind of an off and on, you know, situation with history with running backs. But the offensive coordinator, I forget his name. He was the guy that was at Oregon. Mm-hmm. I forget where else, but anyways, he's got a pretty extensive track record with running backs.
Marcus Arroyo.
Arroyo, thank you.
And like I said with Gauss, right, we don't need Brown to be Scataboo for him to return value here, right? Like,
sure.
This is a supplemental draft. Like, if he's
75%, that'd be 70% of that, you're probably happy.
Exactly. What about some of these receivers? Do we want to discuss the two Colemans first, I guess?
Sure.
They're right there. Matthew Coleman and Miles Coleman. I think both of these guys have insane upside, but a lot more risk than we're kind of letting on. I like Matthew Coleman a lot better. Actually, I'll admit, Miles Coleman does not project well for me at all. And I'm giving him. So here, I will bring him up. So where are you, Miles Coleman? So Miles Coleman.
Are you a shortest? Is it because he's like 5'5"?
He's like 5'6", 159, so I'm a little concerned about that for sure. But I give him 90 targets, right, in my projections. He's averaged 11 yards per catch last year, reeling in about 68% of his catches. So with that, he projects out to about 60 or 682 yards and 6 touchdowns, right? Now, if I do based on what the slot has done for Eric Morris the last 2 years. They averaged right about the same catch percentage, and they averaged 12 yards per catch. That bumps them up to 720. That's, again, you average those two out, and you're looking at about 139 fantasy points this year. Like, he's not DT Sheffield, based on what we've seen so far. Right, yeah, he looked really good in that bowl game. But that, like, right. Like we said with other guys before, it's one sample size. Right, everything else he did that year was a little concerning. And as we'll discuss later, I have another guy listed here. Landon Sides has taken over that outside position where I'm forgetting his name. I loved him last year.
Ward,
like where Damon Ward was last year. And if Damon Ward could catch a freaking ball, Damon Ward probably would have been the wide receiver one for North Texas last year, right? That outside position is still what gets a lot of the attention in that offense. And when Ward came back last year, you notice that's when DT Sheffield's production fell off because they kept trying to feed Ward even though he couldn't catch anything.
Yeah.
So I think I'm out on Miles Coleman at this point. I think there's just too much risk. The size is definitely worrisome, and then he just hasn't really shown enough to me that he's worth taking high in these drafts. Maybe that's a hot take. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a hot take. So I'll a little peek behind the curtain here. So I in my draft here, this 24 teamer we discussed earlier, I had the 19th pick in the first round. And so I was debating between four guys and Bishop Davenport, who I obviously took, and it was really just the quarterback need in this league was what kind of pushed me in that direction. But the other three were Miles Coleman, Matthew Coleman, and Telly Johnson. And I was really torn between Matthew Coleman, which we'll talk about in a second. So I don't know. I mean, I'm a believer in all of the reports that have come out from North Texas about how good Coleman has been, how excited they are for him, about how he's kind of the future there. And let's not bury the lead here, which is if his legit best friend from like elementary school, from Pee Wee football, Drew Mestemaker, wins that job. And we saw what the two of them did in the bowl game where Miles Coleman went bananas the first time Drew Mestemaker was throwing the ball. You get a whole season of that, maybe two seasons of that, maybe three seasons of that, because the dude's 5'6", 159 pounds. That's pretty enticing for Dynasty. So he's somebody I truly considered pretty early in a Dynasty supplemental.
But then what happens when his best friend doesn't win that job?
Then he's still the best wide receiver.
I
think he is.
I think Landon Sides is going to be the best wide receiver for them this year.
Eric, if you look at the history of Eric Morris, he still is running maybe one of the truest forms of the Mike Leach air raid of just anybody that's left of all his descendants. And he just peppers the slot, even at his time at remember that year that he had Lincoln Victor up there at Washington State, and then
that was Ben Arbuckle. I'm looking this up.
That was 2 years ago. It was 2023, I guess. Lincoln Victor went off, right?
Yes, 2023.
He was injured, but when he played, he was incredible.
And then during Eric Morris's time at Washington State, it was the two outside guys that got peppered the most. Same thing at Incarnate Word.
Shut your mouth. That's enough.
No, DT Sheffield was an anomaly. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, I'm going after Landon Sides. I'll take him cheaper in drafts all day long.
So. All right. Yeah. I mean, like, if we're talking about value, sure, maybe. But yeah, I don't know, man. I'm pretty bullish on this North Texas offense. Let's talk about Matthew Coleman, the guy that I took in the second round of this 24 teamer. He's a little bit of a polarizing figure, similar to like Drew Mestemaker, because we saw him play at times last year, but we saw him fill into the Nick Nash role as the slot wide receiver. And what we do know is a very friendly system for the slot in that and shoot. And obviously the big question is he going to continue to play that position? And is he going to be the main guy there? And everybody's kind of really kind of jumping on board this Danny Scudero train. And I'm sorry, but I don't get it. I'm like that gif of what's his face from Parks and Rec when he's talking about the oh my gosh, the do you watch Parks and Rec?
I've seen clips. I've never actually sat down
little
and watched
Sebastian.
It.
Well, everybody goes crazy about the little horse called Little Sebastian, and he just looks at the camera and he's like, I don't get it. That's kind of how I feel about Danny Scuderi right now. I'm sorry, yeah, things were a little quiet on Matthew Coleman early on whenever they were going through spring camp. But there are also reports, especially one that they wrote on the spring game, where they're like, yes, there's no doubt Matthew Coleman is the wide receiver one here. And there was no mention of Danny Scuderi. And it's just like, I'm sorry, he was too good in that bowl game to just wipe that, you know, away and not take that into account.
It is the question of, like, do they move Coleman back outside, even if they call him the wide receiver one, right?
Sure. Like, yeah, I think that's fair.
Because he's a little over 6 foot. He very much has he's like a tall, lanky size that you would expect an outside wide receiver versus Scudero, 5'9", 178, very much fits more that slot size there. But I kind of agree with you, right?
He's listed at 6 foot 169. I mean, he's not a prototypical boundary guy.
No, he's not like 200 pounds and all that, right?
But yeah,
like,
Scudero, they're not moving Scudero out to the boundary, that's for sure.
No, and here's the thing. I wouldn't doubt if they get both Coleman and Scudero out there in four wide receiver sets and they're both playing
sure.
in the slot, right? And that's probably your path to neither one of them repeating what Nick Nash did last year, right? Which I don't think anybody really expects either of them to do so, right? Nick Nash was very much a one and done kind of deal. I doubt we see 170 targets go to one guy to anybody this year.
Right.
What was my thought? Yeah, the spring report that stuck out to me, and I think we might have been reading the same one, but the beat reporter was specifically saying that, like, yeah, no doubt that Matthew Coleman is our number one guy. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, okay, maybe this is like a beat reporter that is like, you know, stuck on, hey, let's hype up the guys who are already here. Let's not really focus on the transfers. But interestingly enough, the second name that came out of his mouth was Leland Smith, who is a transfer over from Purdue, right? And he's like, yeah, he'll be our number two guy. He'll be taking over that Justin Lockhart role, which, by the way, Leland Smith, another great late round pick for people. And like you said, because Danny Scuderi was not mentioned there, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. But
yeah, that's, I think we probably were reading the same article. You know, it's a ceiling play. If you draft Matthew Coleman, you're trying to draft, you know, 70% of that Nick Nash ceiling, like we talked about. You can't expect the same thing. But I'll be damned if he didn't get 15 targets the one game he played in that spot for Nick Nash. So I don't know, man. That seems pretty good to me.
Is it worth spending decently high picks on both of these guys, try to just lock it down? Same realm as like the North Texas QB or UO.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Like I don't even think it's this isn't dynasty strategy, but in a best ball, like I don't even think it's crazy. I don't even think it's crazy to like once every five rounds take a San Jose State wide receiver and just, you know, if you get then you're fine. Like, but yeah, sure. Yeah. Might as well handcuff him.
Last wide receiver we'll discuss here in the elite contributors, and then we'll probably move a little faster to the other two.
Yeah.
Categories here, but Daryl Gill, this is a name that started popping up a little bit more as people kind of realize, like, yeah, who the heck Syracuse going to throw to this year? They threw like 500 times last year. Now, granted, I have zero clue what that offense is going to look like this year, because I don't think they're going to do the exact same thing as they did last year, right? But Daryl Gill is somebody that's kind of popping up recently. He's a deep threat guy, very efficient wide receiver. Your other options really Jonte Cook, and if you want to take a shot on that knucklehead, to be kind, go ahead and do so. But like, I think people who want a safer bet might go with Gill. It's also me. I'm the knucklehead that bets on Jonte Cook in drafts right now.
bet you're a knucklehead that bets on knuckleheads.
I'm a knucklehead that bets on knuckleheads. At least when it comes to Cook, because I think he's got a legit ceiling in that offense. But sure. Gill playing the outside role that Jackson Meeks did so well with last year. Nate, he is a sophomore this year. I can't remember if he's redshirt or a true sophomore this year, so he's got plenty of eligibility left, and you know, Brand Brown can earn some loyalty from guys sometimes. Are you spending a high draft pick on Daryl Gill here?
Yeah, he's one guy that I considered also whenever it was right around that same time that I was looking at Matthew Coleman, or right after right around that same time. I had actually debated on Daryl Gill. I think it's a good play. Trevor Pena is gone. I think Steve Angeli being there competing for the job helps, because I do think that the passing offense is a little bit better with Steve Angeli. Like, we've seen enough from him to think that they can at least have something similar to what they had last year. So, I mean, it's not a one for one with Pena, because Pena played the slot and Daryl Gill is more of an outside guy. At least he was last year. He played about 90% of the time on the boundary. But man, he was, like, when he got his chances last year, he was good. That one game that Pena sat out, I think it was against UConn. Daryl Gill was awesome. Like, he had 170 something yards and a touchdown. Like, we saw him have a good finish to the season, I think, in the bowl game. So, yeah, I mean, he's a good player. He's really, really fast. We're just not exactly sure what that offense is going to look like.
All right, let's move on to our lineup contributors. Again, reminding everybody, these are mostly one-year rentals or guys with big question marks that we're willing to kind of take shots on. I also threw in here one G5 guy that technically has 2 years of eligibility, but as we've discussed ad nauseum this year, Nate, G5 guys are basically one-year rentals to all of us at this point, because we just assume they're going to transfer if they have a big year. Quarterbacks. I'll just name off the four quarterbacks we have here: Bryson Barnes, Reese Poffenbarger, Zevi Eckhouse, and Maverick MacGyver. We already kind of discussed Poffenbarger there when we were discussing Messemaker, but what about Bryson Barnes, Zevi Eckhouse, and Maverick MacGyver? What are your thoughts on those guys? How high are you willing to take these guys in a supplemental draft?
Yeah, I would probably put them in order. For me, it would be Barnes, MacGyver, and then Eckhouse. I like Bryson Barnes quite a bit. He's obviously the most dual threat of these four quarterbacks you just mentioned there. My concern is, who the hell is he passing to? Like,
Brock
anybody.
Lane. Brock
Like,
Lane, the tight end.
I mean, when a very, very average tight end is your best weapon, that's a little concerning. So I
But
think
here,
that's my biggest concern.
I got a question for you, Nate. Who was Devin Dampier throwing to last year? Preseason, like, who were we saying, like, oh, this is his guy?
Devin Dampier. Sorry, I had my mind stuck on Utah State. I was like, Jalen Royals was really good.
Like, we were very high on Luke Weisong before
What
the
is,
season,
I
right?
guess I don't, what do those two have to in common?
Bronco Mendenhall. That's what they
Rocco
have in common.
Mendenhall is not a play caller. I don't care.
Bronco Mendenhall is going to run his system. He's
He
going to
doesn't
tell.
Rocco Mendenhall is a defensive coach. He doesn't have an offensive system. His offensive system is
His
whoever he hires to be his offensive coordinator.
offensive system has translated to three different schools now. Or
Yeah,
not.
but with two different offensive coordinators, Robert and I, and Robert and I's right-hand
I
man,
will put this
best
down.
buddy that's always been next to him, which is Jason Beck.
I'm going to say that I believe more in the Utah State offense this year than I believe in Utah. Like, that offense translating there.
Yeah. Okay. I mean,
Like, Robert Anae, we were so high on him, but the moment he got away from Bronco Mendenhall, it fell apart. Right? I do think that Bronco Mendenhall is a key piece of that. He figures
yeah.
something out where he's like, there's a system here that I'm going to work with. And when he's got a dual threat quarterback, he doesn't really need a ton of great guys to throw to.
Yeah.
Now, they will need a running back to step up, right? Like, who do they got left there? Javon Jacobs, who's coming in from New Mexico, Miles Davis from BYU. Like, they got to figure something out there.
They gotta figure out a lot of things with all their skill positions,
But they
in my
said
opinion. But
he had to do the same thing in New Mexico. So.
I also don't feel like, as good as Bryson Barnes is, I don't think he's the athlete that Devin Dampier is. Devin Dampier, you just say, hey, you have one read, and if it's not there, then fine, run 30 yards away from everybody else because you're so fast. But I like Barnes. Zevi Ekhouse concerns me a little bit. Again, massive overhaul in system. That is not Arbuckle. That is still there. We got one game of Zevi, which, like, I can't sit here and knock it, because I'm talking about a lot of guys, Matthew Coleman
Oh, yeah.
and guys like that, Miles Coleman. We really only saw one game, any Drew Mestemaker. So I can't really knock it, but at the same time, it's like, boy, that was a whole different system that came in. Now, did he ever hit the portal?
Eckhouse?
Or did he? Yeah.
No, I think there was
Did they pull him back in, or did he just stay?
I think there's rumors that he was like considering it and everything, but
it would actually make me feel better if he hit the portal and then they talk him into staying. But yeah, it's interesting. They haven't named him the starter yet. And they told Shepard, Imani Shepard from Rutgers, that he's going to compete for the job if he comes in. I don't think he's going to, but he'll probably get, it sounds like, at least goal line packages because he's a really good athlete. So, I mean, there's probably not a whole lot of rushing upside with Xavier Eckhouse. So, yeah, I don't know. I definitely have my concerns. McIver, I think, could be pretty fun there at Western Kentucky. Them bringing the offensive coordinator with him from where was he at before? Maverick McIver.
Abilene,
there we go. Yeah, because that was really fun because they took Texas Tech into overtime, and he's a former Texas Tech quarterback. So yeah, so having that Abilene Christian connection, I think, could be really cool. Would not shock me if McIver goes for 30 touchdowns, 3,000 yards. I think that's in his range of outcomes.
Yeah, no. Let's see, where do I have? McIver is another one that he doesn't project as well because they do play 11 games, and that definitely knocked him down my rankings.
Yeah, that's right. They do play the triple bye.
So that, yeah, he's at QB 71 in my redraft rankings, which is crazy because I got him projected for 440 pass attempts. But again, he's a zero in the rushing game, right? So, like, that's not going to help him out at all. I've got him projected at, if it was 12 games, I'd have him projected at 3,168 yards and 26 touchdowns. So that very much kind of caps his ceiling a little bit there compared to some of the other ones. Because, like, I have, or like, Poffenbarger, I have his QB 24 right now. And then, who's the other guy we're talking about? Oh, Bryson Barnes. Bryson Barnes is QB 17 for me. I'm such a big believer in Bryson Barnes.
You're very in on Bryson Barnes. I don't blame you. Like, I think, you know, like those last couple of games where he started and he ran the ball like 25 and 20 times or whatever. I mean, they definitely stick with you, but
I feel like I have him as a pretty conservative rushing estimate here too. I got him at 553 rushing yards.
How many passing yards you got him going for to a bunch of 2,300
buddies?
He's at that. Is your QB 17?
That's my QB 17.
All right. That seems like that's a lot of touchdowns to get to 17. It feels like when he's only got 2,800 combined yards.
22 and 5 touchdowns on the ground.
Oh, okay.
Let me see. What does that put his fantasy projection at? That puts him at 277. Fantasy points, which is what was that last year? Again, I think that's top 20 last year in total, at least in total points. Gotcha. 277 would have gotten exactly QB 20. So you don't need much. A lot of times you just got to stay healthy in order to be great for CFF.
Yeah.
What about these running backs? We got three listed here: Robert Henry, Lincoln Pear, and Zach Palmer Smith. We talked about ZPS a little bit earlier when we were discussing the supplemental draft and everything, but what do you think about those three guys?
Yeah, I think Zach Palmer Smith has by far the highest ceiling. Just because he's that Brian Vincent running back. And Robert Henry was somebody I was really high on 2 months ago. And then things have kind of changed a little bit in that backfield, right? With the guy that they got from LSU, what's his face?
Can't John Emery.
Eligible or healthy. Yeah, like John Emery doesn't really scare me that much. But the USC transfer does, like, I think he's a pretty good player. So I think he could compete for carries. I was a little surprised. I think it was the G5 Hive interview. They just kind of looked at him as an afterthought, and they thought maybe that Emery was going to be the guy to compete. And I'm like, I don't know. Like I don't understand how you could trust that John Emery would ever be a reliable person to show up on the football field. But I like Zach Palmer Smith's ceiling out of these three. I don't know what to make of Lincoln Pear. He was awesome for like three games at the very end of the year last year and did nothing up till that point. So I thought that was really strange how you go from a consistently getting like 3 to 7 carries and then all of a sudden you get like 20 carries to finish the year for a few games. So Zach Palmer Smith, definitely the one out of these three, I think I would probably target and hope he becomes that workhorse guy.
Pear shocked me when I did my projection for him. because like it legitimately made me like reconsider, like, how did I completely miss this? Because I forget that Ishmael Mahdi over the last 2 years has averaged 195 carries and 25 targets in 12 games. Right, he's gone, obviously. Yeah. And Pear, in my opinion, seems like the candidate for that next spot up. And I know that Leftwich has left for Texas Tech, right? But they promoted from within, so I have to imagine they're trying to run a very similar system there. And as we saw, like you said, last year, at least in close to the last three games, they're willing to give Pear plenty of carries, right? So if he goes...
Yeah, like, and what happened in the last two games? Did Mahdi, like, did he get hurt? Like, what was the deal?
They just ran a crap ton of plays, and Mahdi and Pear both got fed. Yeah, like, I think they both combined for like 30, 40 carries between the two of them, like, in those games. It was crazy. Yeah. But, like, my projection, based on that average of what Mahdi's done over the last couple of years, right? You give Pear's 4.9 yards per carry, 9 yards a catch and everything, you're looking at about 1,171 yards and 11 touchdowns out of Pear. Like, I think he's got a pretty solid floor. And I hesitate to say this because I know you like to draft a lot, or you like to trade around a lot, Nate, but I am going to probably take Pear with one of my next supplemental picks here if he makes it to me, because I think he's just a solid, really solid guy to grab. And I think he's got... He says junior on Fantrax, but there's no way.
He's only able to play this year because he was around for COVID.
Yeah. One and one.
Yeah, like, it's just the weirdest. Like, look at his game log. So this is his game log as far as attempts from the month of October on: 0 carries, 4 carries, 0 carries, 2 carries, 7 carries, 2 carries, 3 carries. 26 carries, 21 carries. Like, what the hell happened? This isn't like a freshman where you're like, oh, actually, let's give him a chance and see what happens. No, this is a fourth-year guy who's played in like 50 games in his career up to this point.
I do think, wasn't he hurt the year prior or something like that?
Well,
right?
He wasn't hurt enough to get 12 carries the three games combined before that. So it's like,
you throw him out there like very softly. And then like, as you get towards the end, like
wasn't even a bye week leading up to that. It was literally 6 days, November 23rd, 3 carries, November 29th, 26 carries.
I wonder if they knew that Mahdi was like on his way out. And so they're like, all right, let's just see what Pear can do then.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It is super weird. Henry's another interesting one, right? Because, like, yes, if you just go off of what that staff has done the last 2 years, like, Henry should not be drafted nearly as high as he is right now. But one, he did get a ton of carries towards the end of the year. Two, he's a guy that, again, we all thought at first was out of eligibility, but then he looks like he is going to get that extra year of eligibility now. And... quite frankly, like, I don't see how he wouldn't have transferred out to somewhere better if he thought that they were going to go back to that committee approach, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like, and like you said, in the G5 Hive pod, they kind of treated both Emery and Peterson as kind of afterthoughts there, right? Yeah. I think Henry's going to get that workload again this year.
I think what could be fun for Henry is that there's a chance that UTSA is one of, if not the most dynamic G5 offense that there is. Like,
oh yeah,
like, they are going to be really, really good. Like, they are bringing back a couple of real, real nice wide receivers to go along with a very proven, productive quarterback. Like, the offensive coordinator is back, the head coach is back. Like, there's a lot of positive things to think about what this offense could be this year. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like owning a Lincoln Riley offense or a Lincoln Riley running back for Oklahoma back in, you know, like 2016. It's like, yeah, I mean, he might split it, but I mean, you know what? Joe Mixon's going to be just fine with like 14 carries because half of those are going to be inside the 20-yard line, you know?
We'll skip over Landon Sides. I already said my piece on him, but what about Jeff Caldwell, the Cincinnati wide receiver coming up from Lindenwood?
I don't know, man. I knew nothing about Jeff Caldwell. I do not know this man's game. I knew nothing about him until all of a sudden you guys started talking about him, and then I started noticing he was being drafted kind of later on in some of these redrafts. So I don't know, man. You tell me.
I mean, Xavier Henderson, man. He was... He got 95 targets per game last year.
Is there talk that Caldwell was like, was there buzz with him in the spring?
Oh, yeah, lots of buzz in the spring.
Okay. And I mean, somebody's got to catch balls there besides Joe Royer, right?
Oh, 100%. And again, from what it sounds like, he will be that guy. And currently, again, my projection for him was very, very good. Let's see, where is he at?
And they had the receiver, slot receiver, enter the portal late and go to Miami.
Yep. Tony
that
Johnson.
Was their Tony Johnson. Yeah, he was their number two receiver last year. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of vacated targets in that wide receiver room.
There he is. Caldwell.
Joe Royer to the moon, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that. he needs to catch a few more touchdowns, though. Yeah, I got Caldwell projected at 100 targets. And he's averaged over the last 2 years at Lindenwood 19.3 yards per catch. Now, granted, I don't expect him to do that at Cincinnati, obviously, but again, in my projection, I also take into account that Xavier Henderson's averaged 13 yards per catch in that outside position there. I think he'll probably fall somewhere in the middle, and that projects out to about 54 catches, 860 yards, and 8 touchdowns, which that'll do for CFF. I think that's a perfectly fine one-year rental.
Where do you think Lindenwood is?
Where do I think Lindenwood is?
Take a guess. Take a guess as far as what state or region.
I'm going to guess somewhere in the Midwest.
Okay, you can be more specific. Midwest is huge.
Okay, fair. Rust Belt.
Okay.
So, I mean, again, the odds are that, like, if he went to Cincinnati, he's probably from Ohio, right? Like, Lindenwood's in Ohio, right?
No, it is in St. Charles, Missouri, which is a suburb of St. Louis.
Okay.
I had to look it up. I've been to St. Charles many times. Had no idea Lindenwood
was the
university there. Yeah.
So, yeah, Caldwell, I think, is a good one-year rental. Some other guys I consider here, Matthew Henry at Western Kentucky, James Blackstrain at Missouri State. I'm trying to think any other wide receivers, like one-year rentals. Julio Farouk at Maryland could be fun. I don't even know if he's on our list as less than 10%. Probably isn't.
Yeah,
so.
he may be. Yeah, maybe more than 10% on.
Probably. I'm trying to think anybody else. Miles Butler at Middle Tennessee State. Yeah, that's pretty much all I got for one-year rentals at wide receiver. Any other names kind of stand out to you?
No, I think we got them.
Last category here, Nate, potential stashes. As I kind of touched on earlier, right, this is kind of a dying breed in CFF Dynasty, because let's be real, if you haven't done anything by your second year, you're probably not looking too great for CFF in the future, right? So it's not really worth holding on to you unless you have like a very clear path to starting. But there's a couple guys here that are interesting. You threw on some quarterbacks here with Arrington Maiden out of Memphis and Jalen Henderson out of West Virginia. To me, and I think this is kind of the common theme here, of like stashes are almost, instead of stashes, they're almost like contingency plans, right? Like you kind of mentioned it before, right? Like Michael Hawkins isn't really a stash for Oklahoma as much as he is a backup for John Mateer. John Mateer were to go down, therefore you don't lose anything there, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I think if you're drafting Jalen Henderson, it's probably because a few rounds earlier you took Nico Markiel. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pretty much just mentioned him here just because, yeah, I mean, like, that job's not over yet. And a lot of people in, you know, close to that program thought Jalen Henderson was going to win that job before the spring. And now they, you know, it's kind of 60-40 Markiel from all indications. But I mean, I think you still, like, Jalen Henderson needs to be drafted in these dynasty supplementals.
Oh yeah, for sure. Arrington Maiden, though, how do you see that Memphis QB room playing out over the next couple of years, right? Obviously, Brendan Lewis seems to have the leg up at the quarterback position this year. They bring in AJ Hill, who's a pretty popular four-star freshman coming in this year at the quarterback position. I guess, how do you see that playing out?
I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I see Brendan Lewis starting about half the season, losing his job, Arrington Maiden getting his chance at that point. That's kind of how I see this season playing out. I think Arrington Maiden's the best quarterback on that roster currently, and that includes the four-star. Everybody was, you know, like I was very early on Arrington Maiden, somebody I talked about a lot about last year, and all I kept hearing is, well, but they're going to have Antoine Hill coming in next year. And then now all I hear is, well, Antoine Hill's a real project. It's going to be a while before he's ready. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's going to be Arrington Maiden's job before he gets ready. So, and I think if he gets that job, I don't think he's giving it back. I think he's a sneaky, a sneaky play this year where he could, if you draft him and hold on to him, you might have the Memphis starter by the end of the season.
I am currently trying to. There we go. Finally got it to load. Because I remember in the spring game, I very specifically saw
Yeah, he threw
that
a lot.
he was great in the spring game. 18 for 31, 253 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception. Like, and I kept pleading. I'm like, please, Memphis, just do the right thing. This guy fits your system way better than Brendan Lewis does. But they seem
Yeah.
pretty gung ho about it, so we'll see. A couple of running or three running backs here that kind of stood out to me as that I threw in here. Aeneas Williams out of Notre Dame, I think could be an interesting one because if Notre Dame performs well this year, I could see both Love and Jadarian Price potentially heading off to the draft, depending on how well both of them do. And he's got that skill set to be a true like workhorse back, right? He's a really good receiver out of the backfield. He's pretty efficient on the ground. And then Chris Johnson, the running back that came over from Miami, followed kind of has that relationship with Rhett Lashley there coming to SMU. He's got wide receiver and running back dual eligibility. I mean, again, I like TJ Harden. I kind of projected as RB1 there at SMU. I'm not married to that, right? And I do think that there's a chance that a guy like Chris Johnson could end up overtaking that role if Harden performs poorly to start. And then the third guy here is a complete threw in here because I'm like, well, we love that Kansas State backfield. Dylan Edwards might be gone after this year. Who's that next guy up? And well, they got a guy here in Joe Jackson that limited run last year, but he averaged almost 6 yards a carry on the ground, averaged over 10 yards per catch. Again, not a huge sample size or anything, but I'm like, okay, maybe just a name to keep an eye on. What are your thoughts on those three guys?
I like the call with Williams. I think that's I could see him being, RB2 or like 1B potentially there next year. I think we can all agree Love's gone. So it's just going to be him and Price, and who knows, like Price, who knows. So Chris Johnson weighs like 180 pounds. I don't ever think he's going to be like the main guy there. Do you think Miami fans were like, what's the deal with Rhett Lashley? Like taking every one of our players that leaves Miami. Like every Miami player like goes to SMU. It's really weird. Joe Jackson, I mean, you can think Dylan Edwards. Where's Dylan Edwards going though? Like, is the NFL really interested in 5'6", 160? Like,
I don't know, man.
I don't think so. I just like
He's gonna be the
he's like
best sixth round kick returner ever.
there's Gadget and then there's Dylan Edwards. So
I
yeah, I mean,
mean, that's part of the reason why Dylan Edwards is at the top of both of our dynasty rankings, I have to imagine, right?
sure.
Because like, where else is he
Yeah.
gonna go?
Yeah. So yeah, that's of those three, Aeneas Williams would probably be my favorite.
Gotcha. Again, I was just kind of playing around with Joe Jackson a little bit just to see where he could go.
But
And
if we're talking potential stashes as far as like next man up, you know who my favorite is, and it's Adam Muhammad over at Washington.
So I didn't know where to put him in this because like I didn't know how
He's
you were
stacked,
treating
man.
him. So you
Jonah
are
Coleman's
treating
gone.
well. So that's what I'm saying. Jonah Coleman's gone next year, but I was wondering, are you thinking that he's gonna take over this year, or are you thinking he's gonna take over next year?
No, I mean, I think like Jonah, I love the fact that Jonah Coleman lost. It sounds like 20, 25 pounds, something like that. Like he's in really good shape right now. Sounds like he's motivated and hungry to boost his NFL draft stock. And I mean, they've got a good team. I think they're going to lean on Jonah Coleman. I could see Adam Muhammad being the type of guy that gets anywhere from like 5 to 8 carries a game, pushes like somewhere between 50 to 85 carries throughout the season and shows that like, oh, like this guy's got a chance to be pretty special next year and it's going to be his backfield and he'll be the next Jonah Coleman for the next 2 years. So, yeah, I don't like, I love Adam Muhammad, but I don't think he's just going to straight up win that job, but who knows, man, maybe.
Yeah, because I did think about him when I saw him on our list here, and I'm like, how is Nate treating this?
Yeah,
So,
it's it, next man up.
one wide receiver I did throw in here as a potential stash, and like as I mentioned before, this is almost me kind of playing the odds a little bit of like worst case scenario, I know for a fact he'll be the wide receiver one for this offense next year. Best case scenario, he could be it this year. Right, and that's Anthony Eager out of South Alabama. Definitely an intriguing guy, young guy that that staff loves over there. And I'll discuss this more with Chris Kay on this week's CTN when we discuss like players that are hard to rank. And one of those players I'll bring up is Devin Voisin, the wide receiver there at South Alabama. And Anthony Eager is one of the reasons why. He had himself a really solid year last year. And he has shown the ability to be able to kind of slide into that spot that, you know, Jamal Pritchett and Colin Lacey have over the last couple of years. Now, Major Applewhite is not afraid to just move to targeting the outside guy or the slot guy. He just targets whoever his best receiver is. That currently, I think, is Devin Voisin. But boy, like, is it hard to kind of figure out exactly where Devin Voisin is in his recovery? Is he the same receiver that he was a couple of years ago, right? Like I said, for me, Eager, I think it's pretty clear that either it's his stuff this year or it's definitely his stuff next year. So I'd grab him in a supplemental draft and just run with that.
I mean, all I got to say is Devin Boyson's finally going to be out of eligibility after this year, after like 13 years. So sure.
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 Sure. Now that I've mentioned his name, I got to make sure I take him here in this fourth round potentially so you don't take him from me. Because I can see Nate licking his lips over there being like, ooh, Major Applewhite, wide receiver one, you say? Potentially for 2 years?
I got his quarterback, so
that is actually very true. again, I got a huge list of names here, Nate. I guess I know we're running at about an hour 20 here and everything, but yeah. Like any of these names in this list here kind of stick out to you that you just want to get your thoughts on?
Yeah, I'll give a couple thoughts. I do think Brad Jackson's going to win that Texas State job, which, given his rushing upside, could be pretty fun. And you would think, given that he was QB3 for most of the year last year, that he's going to be available in some spots there.
I've drafted a ton of him at the end of best balls this year.
I think that's a really interesting kind of late round flyer. As far as some of these running backs, the one that stood out to me is the one you got listed here first, Dalen Smothers, Hollywood Smothers. Like, I think he's in line to have a pretty solid season there at North Carolina State. Like I said, I'm pretty high on a lot of the offensive pieces there. He's one of the reasons why. I think he looked really good in limited action there. I didn't think that would be a big loss for Oklahoma when he left. And I mean, it's running back, the running back unit's fine at OU, but like, I think he's actually a pretty good player. So, Jacoby Williams, it still blows my mind that people are like, there's talk of, what's his face from USC that just transferred in there?
Quentin Joyner
being like drafted in the second round of some of these drafts. I'm just like, really? And then I read the Texas Tech 247 beat writers rundown on like they give like one guy for each position they think's going to be the dude, and literally all three of them said Jacoby Williams, and this was written like a week ago.
I need to cut this part out, otherwise Chris K is never going to let us hear the end of this.
And I'm just like, are we sure Quentin Joyner is worth a second round pick? Because that seems crazy to me, because Jacoby Williams is kind of a big deal there. So and then as far as just some of these wider series, I mean, obviously there's a whole bunch of really good names here, and I love kind of digging deep whenever it comes to wide receivers. I love Corey Milliner over at UAB. Like, he's really talented. I don't think enough people are talking about him. I think he's a really good player. So he was probably the name that stood out the most to me out of this list here. I'm looking at some of these. Oh, I think the ECU offense, their pass offense, is going to go bonkers this year. Like, I think there's a chance that like they're just going to sling it all over the field. And what we saw at the end of the year last year is very much what we're going to continue to see. So I think either one of the Smiths there could be really fun if you get your hands on them.
No, yeah, a lot of fun names here. Again, guys that kind of stick out to me, Hunter Watson at Sam Houston there. Obviously, you got, oh my God, what's his offensive coordinator at Wisconsin? Phil Longo. So you got Phil Longo there, right? We saw what he was able to do with the dual threat guy with Drake May and Sam Howell, right? Like, Hunter Watson could be a ton of fun there if they're able to get that offense running year one. Other guys that kind of stand out to me at running back, Kind of an under the radar name. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to say that because I really want to draft him and I don't even want to take that chance.
Yeah, you got a lot of guys you need to draft in this next round.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I'm staring at the big gaps between all my picks. It's torture. Emmett Johnson might be pretty solid there at Nebraska. I got him ranked pretty high in redraft. Obviously, Greg DeRozier, I think, is one of the highest upside picks that you can possibly take. Because, again, I do think there's a decent chance that they're a committee there, but there's also a decent chance that he could be the RB1, in which case, given how efficient he's been in the past, that could be absolutely awesome for CFF, like talking 300 fantasy points upside kind of deal.
Yeah.
Nate Palmer out of TCU, I know that's a Chris K favorite right there. Turbo Richards is a guy that I know a lot of people like. And that receiver, again, a lot of year one guys here, but...
Are you still buying Ra Ra Thomas?
I still take shots at him. Again, the thing that kind of holds me back is, like, again, he wasn't there in the spring.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But he's way better than anybody else in that wide receiver room. Or at least he should be.
You'd think so, right?
You would think so. And again, like, he wasn't bad at Mississippi State or Georgia.
No.
Right? When you, like, look at his, like, yards per route run, you look at his efficiency numbers and everything, like, he just had a very unfortunate issue with his younger brother and his girlfriend. Right? Like, otherwise, like, he's a good football player. I think he should perform pretty well at Troy. He should be able to come in there and be the wide receiver one. But, yeah, I still take shots on him.
Nice.
So, and then wide, tight ends, it's just like in redraft. Just draft him like a redraft.
Yeah.
I would even, like, play the game of eligibility.
I do like your Rocky Beers call, man.
Dude, I'm so in on Rocky Beers at Florida State,
be.
Colorado State.
He's a good player. It's a good player.
He's a fun player, and isn't Boulder like a really good isn't it like a big beer town?
It is. It's one of the best in the country.
That's like an NIL opportunity.
It's not Boulder. It's Fort Collins, where
Fort Collins.
Colorado State is. But yeah,
yes, sorry, beautiful
Fort Collins, one of my favorite towns in the country.
They got good IPAs there.
Fantastic IPAs. Yeah. The beer scene is tremendous. Everybody bikes. Nobody really drives around there. Everybody bikes wherever they need to go. You're literally right up against the mountains. There's incredible hiking, rock climbing. It's an awesome town.
Yeah. The only worry I have with Rocky Beers is, I have two worries. One is Jackson Warren. Again, he was getting a lot of hype and he'll be back from injury. So we'll see how that plays out. Two, Colorado State could just stink this year.
Yeah.
And that just ends all hope there. So.
That's fair. Yep.
All righty. That's a ton of guys we discussed here. Nate, appreciate you coming on and everything. What are you working on, man?
Once I get back to doing some writing, it'll probably be focused mostly on the guides so that we can get that bad boy ready to go here in the next month.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm a little behind on the profiles I've set up. We're trying to get one more set of redraft rankings onto the website before I put together the player profiles and everything. So don't worry, we'll have those ready to go. I know that's everybody's favorite part of writing the guide, and that's why I put it last, because I know you guys blow through that like candy, like a kid on Halloween.
Yeah, at this point, it's going to be Chris K's CFF.
Dude, he is the MVP of the CFF guide this year, for sure. Like, dude has been cranking it out. Now, I haven't read a lot of what he's written so far. So,
most
like,
of it sounds inappropriate.
It there's a good chance I might have him rewrite some of it. No, he's been absolutely phenomenal for us. But that's also what you get when you're on maternity leave. So he's helped us out a ton there.
Very
little sleep and lots of CFF writing. So
that's right.
All right. Nate, appreciate it, man. Appreciate all of you guys listening out there. Glad we could finally get this out to you. And I guess, Nate, we'll be back within a couple weeks here probably to put together our annual freshman supplemental mock draft show. We gotta figure out who we're bringing on for that, but
yeah,
that'll be a ton of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Appreciate y'all. Y'all have a wonderful and blessed week. Month.